Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, hello, everyone. My name is Lynn, and I'm here again with my wonderful co-hosts, Kelly, Ken, Robert, and, of course, Bobby Neer. Hello there, folks.
Hello.
Hey.
Howdy, howdy.
Today we'll be discussing the Twilight Zone episode titled A World of His Own. But before we get started, I'll turn it over to Robert to play the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling,
home of Mr. Gregory West, one of America's most noted playwrights. The office of Mr. Gregory West. Mr. Gregory West. Shy, quiet, and at the moment, very happy. Merry, warm, affectionate. And the final ingredient, Mrs. Gregory West.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's romantic story on the Twilight Zone. At the same time, we want you to realize that it was, of course, purely fictional. In real life, such ridiculous nonsense could never...
Rod! You shouldn't. I mean, you shouldn't say such things as nonsense and ridiculous.
Well, that's the way it goes.
Thank you, Robert. Today's episode is indeed titled A World of His Own and stars Keenan Wynn as an author named Gregory West, who has the amazing ability to make a person materialize in front of him simply by describing them in detail into his tape recorder. He also can, as he puts it, uncreate the person by cutting off the strip of tape that describes them, crumbling it, and throwing it into the fireplace. Now, he truly enjoys creating a sweet and lovely blonde-haired woman named Mary. But when his wife Victoria happens to catch a glimpse of them together through the window, he's forced to get rid of Mary, as he has a few other times, before Victoria catches him with her. Well, Victoria walks in, and she's shocked that Mary is nowhere to be found. So she starts looking around and interrogates Greg until he unwittingly lets his secret slip out and is forced to tell Victoria everything about his strange gift. Well, anyway, he has to tell Victoria everything about his gift. So Victoria thinks he's completely insane, and she threatens to have him committed. So Gregory tries to prove to her that he's telling the truth by making an elephant appear in the hallway to stop her from leaving. Then he brings back Mary to further make his point, and then he throws Mary's strip of tape from the tape recorder into the fireplace, and she disappears right in front of Victoria. So, of course, you know, before he throws Mary away again, Mary pleads with Gregory not to send her away once more, but Greg explains that he has to, because after all, Victoria is his wife. So Mary tells him, please, Greg, don't bring me back again. Don't bring me back after this. So after all that, Victoria still doesn't believe Gregory. You know, even after seeing Mary appear and disappear before her eyes, she doesn't believe him. So she nastily screams at Gregory, telling him that she's going to see a divorce lawyer and then have him committed. So Gregory goes to a hidden safe in the wall and shows Victoria an envelope with her name on it and a piece of tape inside. He tells her that it's how she came to exist, but he admits that he made her too strong-willed, too beautiful, and too flawless, and he forgot to add a bit of human frailty to the mix. And, of course, you know, he realizes that he has no choice but to live with her as she is, because at one time he thought that was the kind of wife he'd always wanted. So before he can put her strip of tape back in the safe, Victoria grabs it from him, and she tosses it into the fireplace, telling him that that's what she thinks of his nonsense. Well, of course, Victoria starts to feel funny, and then she disappears. Well, first, Greg's upset and starts to try to bring her back by dictating her description into the tape recorder again, but then he suddenly stops and decides to leave well enough alone, and instead, he creates Mary again, only this time as Mrs. Mary West. Mary then appears, and all ends happily for Gregory and Mary. We then hear and see Rod Serling sitting on Gregory's desk, saying that, as you heard from Robert's clip, such a notion of creating and uncreating a person is ridiculous nonsense. At which point, Keenan Wynn interrupts him and says, you know, Rod, you shouldn't say such things. You shouldn't call it nonsense. And he takes an envelope from the safe with Rod Serling's name on it. He pulls out the piece of tape, crumbles it, throws it into the fireplace, and then Rod disappears from the desk. So that's how this one ends, but, you know, I know there's a lot of mixed feelings on it. I happen to like this episode very much. In fact, I gave it a classic rating. The main reason for that is because this is the only episode that Rod Serling actually became a part of the episode. I know it was only for a minute, but I thought that was just really clever. I thought it was terrific that they did that, and I thought the story itself was very good. I liked Keenan Wynn. I thought he played his role well. I thought Mary was a terrific character. And Phyllis Kirk, she played the shrewish, jealous, domineering wife very well. I just liked the whole story. And, you know, seeing Rod Serling become a part of the episode was, that was a treat for me. You know, that was great. So I gave it a classic rating. I really liked it. But now I'm going to turn it over to Kelly to see what she thinks of it. Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay, well, when I reviewed this, I didn't give it a classic rating, but I did give it a favorable rating. I thought it was a good episode. I believe I ranked it a 3, because I enjoyed it. I remember the very first time I saw it, I found it amusing. I thought it was kind of cute, the idea that this guy could dictate into his tape recorder the kind of person he wanted to have around him. I had thought many times as I thought of that episode, I was thinking, boy, wouldn't it be nice if we could all do something like that? but I thought it was a fun episode, and I thought it was a nice touch. I'm with Lynn. I thought it was a nice touch at the end having Rod Serling show up at the very end and be part of it. And it was actually kind of a prelude of things to come, because it was the following season was when we start to see Rod Serling standing as part of the set explaining what the episode was going to be for that evening. And I didn't really have that big of a problem with it. I thought they have the part of the episode where the elephant appears. I thought that was kind of ingenious. As I saw that, I was thinking to myself, I wonder how they got that elephant onto the set there. But I thought it was an okay episode. I really didn't have a lot to complain about. Like I said, I didn't give it a classic rating because it's not one of the episodes that I tend to think about, you know, right away when I think of a Twilight Zone episode. But I found it to be enjoyable, but I think Lynn and I are in a minority here. In fact, I think this episode cut down the gender lines here because it appears Lynn and I both liked it and Ken and Bob hated it. So let's find out why Ken hates it. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay.
Hold on, Ken. Let me get some caffeine here. Okay, I'm ready. Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, hey, by the way, Ken, before you start, I just want to welcome Zim the Pot, 69. I want to welcome Angela, and I would like to welcome Private Entity, and I'd also like to welcome 301 and Guest 3. We have a full house, and also Guest 2. We have a full house here today. Welcome, guys. Okay, Ken.
Yes, I want to welcome everybody to the show, too. I'll give you a little forewarning that I'm going to rip into this episode. It's episode 36 of season 1, the final episode of the season. And when I watch The Twilight Zone, again, I'm gonna repeat myself. I watch it for a science fiction series. We've debated this, and we'll debate it some more in the future. But my ideal viewing of The Twilight Zone is on a dark night, and the wind is blowing, and it's pouring rain outside. I'm going to tune into this series. And I remember when I took my kids on a vacation many, many years ago, there was a Twilight Zone marathon on. And we were stuck in a small town, and we were in the middle of nowhere. We were going from one place to another on a family vacation. But this night, it was pouring rain, and it was windy, and it was scary. And the show was on in the motel room on the Sci-Fi Channel, whatever it was. And my kids, they were all young, my 4 kids, maybe 12 and under. And I said, hey, guys, let's watch this marathon. We have nothing else to do tonight. And my kids tuned in, and they were just enthralled. They loved it. They loved to be scared. Some of the episodes that are on that night, fortunately, were really good ones. But if this one was on that night, my kids are not going to be scared. So I'm not going to watch The Twilight Zone on a beach in Hawaii with the pleasant sunshine, you know, sitting on a porch on a big plantation, and everything is rosy outside. I'm not going to tune into The Twilight Zone to watch it, okay? So that's me. And so I have, guys, get ready. I have 5 reasons why this episode is terrible, okay? Starting with number 5. Kenyon Wynn in the lead role was awful. I mean, he looks like Dr. Phil. He has a nice, soothing voice. His smile is plastic. And his eyes, if you look at his eyes, they're just full of lust. So that right away offended me. And so he was miscast. He was awful. I couldn't stand him, okay? All right, the 4th reason why this episode is terrible. Mary LaRoche, how do you say her last name, Lynn? Do you know?
LaRoche.
Yeah, LaRoche.
Like S-H. Yeah, like S-H.
She's pretty, but she was awful. She was just a yes, yes girl. She did whatever Wes told her to do. Pour me a drink, honey. Put your head on my nice shoulder. Let's just relax on the couch. She was just a mistress. And so I would think women would be offended by watching that. You know, what about the equal rights movement in this country, girls? And if you watch this episode, this guy was the master, and Mary was the mistress, or you could say a slave, or whatever you want to call her. She was a yes, yes girl. All right, the 3rd reason why this episode is terrible, Phyllis Kirk as the wife. Now, she's pretty, but she was wearing too much makeup. I mean, her eyes, I looked at it this morning again, the episode. Her eyes were really painted, her eyebrows, her eyelids, the mascara, her lipstick, the fur coat. She comes home in the middle of the day or whenever it was, jealous. But to put up with this husband, I mean, they didn't look like a match to me. Sorry, guys. If you see a husband and wife, usually there's a match, okay? She screams. She wants to leave. Runs into an elephant. I'll get to that later. But I was just offended that she would put up with such a loser husband, okay? All right, the second reason why this episode is terrible. Rod Serling showing up at the end, embarrassing himself, not only in 1960, but for the next 50 years. Anyone who tunes into this show and sees him at the end are going to say, Rod, what are you doing to yourself? I mean, it was kind of like a comic relief sketch at the end. Sorry, Rod, it doesn't work for your series. What happened to your famous quote that you have for the series? And I'll quote it. This series lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. Hey, Rod, what happened to the pit of man's fears for your series? I don't see anything in this episode, especially the closing episode of the series. Come on, Rod, you blew it. Big time tank, Rod. That's my opinion. All right, but the number one reason why this episode is terrible, and it's the elephant. And I really felt sorry for the elephant. Okay, you know why? Because, you know, in Hollywood, if you take a part, you want to make sure that the part helps your resume so that you can get future parts in the future, right? You know, whether a movie or TV. You know what? This part for the elephant ruined the elephant's career. I mean, he just stood in the hallway and just did nothing, okay? And I don't remember seeing this elephant in the future TV shows or future movies. In fact, the elephant wasn't recast anywhere else. Now, if you can find out where he was recast, then I'll believe you, okay? But the poor element, elephant, I keep saying element, I'm going to say elephant, okay? He was finished. His career is finished by appearing in this episode. Okay, guys, so I rated it a zero. I'm going to give it a double zero, not only for the directors, the writers, the actors, but just the whole concept of the series finishing on such a poor note. Am I going to tune into season two? Well, fortunately, I did. But my kids are upset, you know, when they saw this episode. I told my daughter that we're viewing this one and my son, and they said, eh, kind of so-so. My kids wanted that scary one, and the recommendation I would give for the series is, hey, guys, finish on the highest note possible. How about Monsters Are Due on Maple Street? And the final scene where the people are running through the streets full of suspicion of each other, going after each other, and then those two Martians or whatever saying, hey, this is how we destroy planet Earth, and you have that eerie, creepy feeling at the end. That's my ideal ending to the season. All right, Lynn, who do I turn it over to next?
It's going to be turned over to Robert now, and I just wanted to say welcome to Dave. I forgot to welcome Dave earlier. That's the elephant.
All right,
at least the elephant bellowed.
Robert, are you okay? I hope you're okay wherever you are.
Well, what I was wondering, Ken, did it get the dog seal approval? Did he bark, or did he kind of cover his ears when he laid down and watched it?
I had mercy on my dog. I did not mention it to my dog this episode.
Oh, good.
I want to be nice to the dog.
Okay.
So go ahead, Robert.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, pretty much the story, as it's been explained, playwright creates and destroys anything he creates at will with his tape recorder. Of course, it kind of reminded me of a cursed object like in Friday the 13th series, but unfortunately, this was a very dry as a martini and boring episode. I mean, it was just a basic episode of a wife spying on her husband and finding somebody there, but trying to prove it through the whole story. He creates peers to him by taping his description of the characters he sees in his mind. But later on, the wife, of course, discovers something about herself in the process. But there again, the best part of the story. Now, I give this a 2 out of 5 because, to me, it was an average, but at least one point does deserve Rod coming on and breaking the fourth wall with his appearance at the end. I thought that was cool. But unfortunately, this story, I felt, should have been around the middle of the season, not the very end. It's a very sad way, unfortunately, to end a first season. I mean, you want to end your season on a strong note, kind of like Where Is Everybody, which was a strong first opening for the Twilight Zone, and then to end it with this is, I don't know why. You know, maybe the A, B, C scripts, and they got down to the C scripts when they finished this season. But, I mean, if I had my choice of story to end the first season with, it'd be either people are like over, Nice Place to Visit, Monsters Do on Maple Street, even Stop at Willoughby would have been a lot better than this one. For all the sad part about this story, there is some good things that happened later on where people take up the gauntlet and try to improve, make a better story. One situation is a favorite movie of mine called The Dark Half, which is a George Romero, written by Stephen King.
Sam Beaumont has a secret.
I know all about it.
A piece of himself he keeps hidden.
You just don't want to give up George. You become attached to him.
Locked away until he needs it.
These behaviors could be interpreted as schizophrenia.
Away from the light, safe in the shadows.
I wrote those words, and I have no recollection of doing it.
But sometimes, secrets take on a life of their own. Thad Beaumont thought he didn't need George Stark anymore.
The American way of death.
That's it.
He served his purpose. Time to lay him to rest. But George is not about to go quietly.
You really don't realize what you like when you write those books, do you? Like watching Jekyll turn into Hyde.
We're here to question you in connection with a capital crime.
Evidence says you did.
George Stark has somehow come to life.
Hello, George. I've come close to believing a ghost story. Yes, you're talking about a man who never was.
No! Take over your life, can't you see that?
Based upon a book by Stephen King comes George A. Romero's masterful vision of a nightmare come true.
Are you ready? Just waiting on you.
The Dark Half.
And this one was basically about a writer bringing his creation back to life. I really like The Dark Half, and another one that comes to mind, too, is, of course, from Doctor Who. The Second Doctor, played by Patrick Troughton. If you remember, Patrick Troughton also appeared in different movies and TV shows. One well-known one is The Omen, as the priest in that one. But here is a scene from The Mind Robber.
To what purpose?
To bring the whole planet Earth under our control.
And its people?
We have no wish to destroy them. Merely adjust their minds to suit our purpose.
Sausages! Man will just become like a string of sausages all the same.
Man will simply vanish from the earth and reappear here.
Leaving the earth undamaged and uninhabited for you to take over.
Precisely.
If I cooperate.
You have no alternative. You are part of the master brain.
So the computer feeds off my thoughts, does it?
Correct.
Then it will create what I think.
Oh, no. No, no, no. You're now under control of the master brain.
Are you so sure? You couldn't control my mind before, and you certainly can't control it now.
Submit!
No! You've given me equal power. It's now a battle of wits between you and me.
Oh, no. No, no! Stop! Stop!
Zoe, can you hear me? Think for yourselves. Don't be afraid. You can open the book. Go on. You can do it.
Oh, oh dear. This is against everything we ever worked for. Warning. Warning. Emergency action. Emergency. Emergency.
Don't worry about fiction. Hang on to real life.
And that was Patrick Troughton as the Second Doctor. And that's one of Dave's favorite because of Zoe on the TARDIS console. So, but like I said, there's other ones. Even in Twilight Zone later on, we get some better, similar stories like this one. But with that, like I said, 2 out of 5. And also, before I pass on to Bobby, I wanted to correct myself that when I reviewed the After Hours, I gave it an excellent. And I kept saying classic by accident, but it was an excellent for that one. But pass it over to Bobby.
All right. Thank you very much. Actually, I don't know what Ken is talking about when he says it wasn't scary enough, because it scared the crap out of me. I thought The Twilight Zone was turning into a comedy show. And that's the problem I have with that. I don't need comedy relief in The Twilight Zone. I don't want comedy relief in a series like that. I know some people need that. I don't. If I want comedy on TV, I'll tune in today to something really ridiculous like Glee or something idiotic like that, and that'll cause me to start laughing. But in The Twilight Zone, I don't need that kind of thing. That's the real problem I have with it. The other problem is, as I've said in the past couple of shows, is that it's the end of the season. And since we did the After Hours, there's been several shows to end that season that are simply lousy. And you can't do that. Now, you could do it back in 1960, but you can't do that today, because today shows get yanked in 5 minutes. And if you lose your audience, you can pack it up and say goodbye. I don't know that the show would have survived today, because a lot of people might have tuned out and said, this is not what I came here for. So Ken is right about that. It's just, it's an appalling and ridiculous way to end the season. Now, even though I hate the episode and I think it's incredibly boring, I do like the very end of it. I think it's kind of amusing at the end to see Serling in there, although Ken is right. He really doesn't need to trash his reputation by showing up in such a lousy episode. But that's kind of different. And I think that the idea that he got deleted by the writer is kind of interesting. And I think that episode, even though I certainly don't want to see it darken my life again at any time in the future, might be an interesting episode if the series was on today, as a more serious episode, not by a writer but by somebody on the internet, somebody using a computer, or say a famous fictional writer gets so absorbed with himself and his popularity that he begins to take his characters he's created and bring them to life. And things really get serious after a while, and maybe one of those characters decides at the end to delete him so that he's gone forever. It's the same kind of story, but it's not done in a light vein like this. One of the problems with the story is that nobody's taking it seriously. I mean, Rod Serling hardly has to come on to the end and say, you know, this is all ridiculous, because that's obvious while you're watching it, that it's ridiculous. And so I was really turned off by that. But I watched it a few days ago, and I cannot get through it at all. It drones on and on and on and on and on. And when his actual wife shows up, she's clueless for too long about what's going on. And then when she finds out what's going on, it takes about 15 minutes to keep debating this over and over again about what he's doing and should he do it and this, that, and the other. And you know, move on to something else. Except there's nothing to move on to. That's the whole story. The whole story is that he does this and she found out about it. And now what's going to happen? But there's nothing interesting about it. I like Ken's idea of ending with Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. Although it's not my all-time favorite episode, it would be indeed a good ending with seeing the space aliens up on the hilltop talking to each other and saying that this is how they're going to take over the planet by turning everybody against each other. And that would leave the audience hanging and wondering, just are we going to continue that theme in the second season and see exactly what does happen to the world? It's kind of scary, and it leaves a lot of things open. But you're going to end the season with supposed to be a funny episode. I don't know where you're going after that. Now, I was very young when I first saw this, and I'm surprised that I came back for the second season, because normally a show like this would turn me off, and I'd decide, well, if that's where you're going, goodbye. I've got other things to watch. And I think it's misplaced. It's a bad idea. If it had been in the middle of the season somewhere, I would just write it off and say, yeah, it was lousy, because there are other ones I didn't like. Goodness knows, Mr. Beavis and junk like that I absolutely hated. But it was in the middle of the season, and no matter how good a series is, there's always ones that you don't like. And I just write it off and say, well, we'll wait till next week. But this is the end of the season, and it's like, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's like the third or fourth episode in a row that is less than sparkling, and that really is a problem for me. But other than that, there's just nothing to say. I agree with Ken about the acting. Everybody's trying too hard to be cute and funny, and it just doesn't work. And I don't know. There just isn't anything in it that makes it interesting for me. It's the longest 25 minutes I've ever spent in my life. There are other bad episodes in the series, but there's something special about this that makes it, you know, worse than ever. And basically, that's about it. That's all I got, Lynn.
Bobby?
Okay.
Yeah, what?
What if they switched it to a woman instead of a man writer? Or what do you feel could have helped this story? What should they change it to make it?
I think what could have helped is that Rod Serling should have taken it and thrown it into the fireplace before they ever turned it into an episode. That would have helped a great deal. He should have done exactly what Keenan Wynn did. Should have taken one look at it and said, this is garbage, and then that would have been it. Let's say if Ken, how do you think they could have improved it?
The script has some intrigue. The intrigue of making your character come to life. You could toss around a lot of ideas. You got to get the best writers in the room, and you got to brainstorm it together. Off the top of my head, again, I'm upset with the male-dominated scripts. Maybe have the female in the lead role, but you've got to make the episode scary. That would be my recommendation. You got to scare the pants off.
I know, but it's 1960, and nobody did that in TV shows then. Women were always played a second part. So
yeah,
so that was normal for back then. Of course, today would be ridiculous.
Maybe make the human as an alien. Maybe the reveal at the end would have been wasn't really a human writer, but an alien writer.
That's a good point. That might have been more in keeping with the Twilight Zone. I just don't need any comedy That's it. When I watch a scary, I mean, if you watch a horror movie, do you want comedy in the middle of it? I mean, you're there for a purpose. You're there to get scared, and you either are or you're not, and it's as simple as that. So comedy relief doesn't do anything for me. Comedy relief, watch another TV show. There's plenty of comedies back on that. So watch one, and then you'll lighten up. All right, let's find out from Dave what he thinks about it.
Dave, what do you have to say?
Oh, lots. Just one general point first. I think comedy can work in horror or frightening things because it can sometimes undercut and be a tension relief. You get the thing where you know everything's tense and it turns out to be a cat, not the monster that's got in, and that lightens everybody. But then when the monster really comes out, then they're even more frightened because they're not sure each time there's a sudden jump or movement whether it's going to be, you know, your imagination or whether it's actually going to be that fear from the dark. But going on this episode, I think basically it was the fact that it was the last episode of the series. And to my mind, it makes more sense if you have this theory that possibly Rod Sterling and the people who made Twilight Zone may have not known at this point whether the series was going to be taken up for Series 2. If that's the case, then a lot of it makes more sense to me. Firstly, because he may be thinking, well, if they don't recommission it and this is our final episode, some of you might think, well, let's make it the scariest one ever. But I'm thinking what he's saying is two things. One, I'm going to make sure I make an appearance in this one almost to sort of bow out and take credit for the show. So I'm going to be actually appearing in it. Secondly, they're going to be the situation where in virtually every episode that we've seen, somebody thinks they've got a brilliant idea to, you know, to cheat the devil or to cheat this or cheat that, or, you know, cast a love spell or whatever it is, and it always goes wrong. This is one of the few episodes when the actual main character actually wins for once. So I think that's where they've decided to take the show. Another thing is, it's as I said before, that Rod Sterling always seems to try and get two stories out of every idea he has. And to me, this is a counterpoint to The Chaser, the one where the chap had the you know, the love potion, and really he got tangled up in it. This particular man actually has this quote-unquote ideal way of having his female companion and gets away with it. Now, Ken was mentioning a couple of things about his wife not being able to grasp onto what was happening, this, that, and the other, and to do with her makeup and style. Well, don't forget, she was not a real person. She was a person created from this man's, well, I think Ken used the word lust, but basically from his idea of what he wanted in a wife. He made her that sort of upmarket, but slightly maybe tarty, if some people think it that way, a wife. And he also gave her a little bit of independence. Of course, he came to rue that, and that is why the second woman, and some people seem to think she was slightly insipid, maybe, you know, make me drinks, make me this, make me that. That was his solution to the fact that he'd not quite got his recipe right for his first wife. So it was basically that. I'm also surprised that some people have said that the divide was that the women may have liked this and the men didn't, because one would have thought that the men in the room were more likely to have liked this episode, but then gone on into a little bit of an imaginational trip of their own, thinking, now just what would I create as my perfect partner? I like the elephant because that reminded me that it wasn't just a straightforward play. There's quite a few things. Let me just mention one or two others. It was a bit self-indulgent. I think that's probably the biggest criticism you can take. It was basically Rod Sterling taking a bow. Now, whether you think he miscalculated by having a happy ending of his final episode and that slightly comic element, that is certainly debatable. But I think that was why. I don't think this episode would have occurred anywhere else than as a last episode, even though some people might see it as being, you know, a limp ending to the series. There were a couple of other points that I had written down, but not really fitting in from that. I just basically think the actor was played to be an ordinary man who never in his wildest dreams would have had those sort of partners, and therefore the only way he could get them was for him to create them in this way.
And, Dave, can I interrupt you for a second? I'm sorry.
Certainly can.
But you mentioned about whether the ratings were good or not. And I wonder
whether it was going to come back or not. I'm wondering whether he didn't know whether that was going to be the last episode ever.
Right.
Therefore, he came off his final bow.
Right. While you were speaking, I went on the internet to find out, and this is what I found, this couple of paragraphs here. The critics loved it. Some of them called it the best science fiction they'd ever seen on TV. But it says here, even as the show proved popular to television's critics, it struggled to find a receptive audience of television viewers. CBS was banking on a rating of at least 21 or 22, but its initial numbers were much worse. The series' future was jeopardized when its third episode, Mr. Denton on Doomsday, earned a 16.3 rating. The show attracted a large enough audience to survive a brief hiatus in November, during which it finally surpassed its competition on ABC and NBC and convinced its sponsors, General Foods and Kimberly-Clark, to stay on until the end of the season. So, yeah, things were pretty iffy even at the end of the season.
Right, well, as well, and on the wiki page, it does say that one of the sponsors dropped out at the end of season one, and they took on Procter and someone.
Procter and Gamble,
It may well have been that he's thinking, well, if this is going to be the last episode, that's why he made the little cameo part of
that's
himself.
A good point.
And for once, because people might think, well, you know, the casual viewer might think, every week I come in and, you know, the devil always finds a way, a little bit like in Bedazzled, the Peter Cook film, Dudley Moore. The devil always finds a way of tricking you. So, you know, you specify, you know, you want to be married, you want to be happy, you want to be this, you want to be that. And then it turns out that the devil gives you all that, but then makes you a eunuch or something, or does something to destroy the exact letter that you've set out. And for once, this person was a winner. So I think basically he was thinking, well, if this is the last one I'm going to have, we're going to have a happy ending. You know, the poor schluck is going to win for once, and that's the way the series will go out. But
I don't know. Yeah. This feels more like a episode we find on Bewitched, like, you know, Darren being there, or, you know, Samantha conjuring up something like that, more than, you know, Keenan in this one. I don't know. If they're having that much problems, they should have realized that, well, we should finish on a stronger note than what we finished with. And
yeah,
when we talk about the next show, I don't know what they were thinking of that, but
I can see that. I'm not saying necessarily it was a good idea to finish with this episode, but this episode could not have been anywhere else than as the last one. If it had had this one, you know, episode 20, people would have stopped watching because they would have thought, well, it's gone to pot now. You know, somebody has actually got what they wanted and basically beaten the Twilight Zone.
How about at the end of the series, at the end of the fifth season?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He may not have known that we're going to be a season two. I'm thinking that his mindset when he did this was, this could be the last one we make. Therefore, let's have the poor schmuck win for once.
Yeah, he's talking about the Bewitching Pool, which ended the series.
Yeah, this would have even been better than that, I think. I don't like that one at all. Anyway, I think if he really wanted to do that, I mean, it's unclear here what he was being told as far as the series is concerned. And it was up to the sponsors, and they decided to take a chance to stay with it, which is pretty funny. You can imagine if they had said no, this never would have existed. So it's pretty amazing. But
and it also was probably a fairly cheap one to produce, because I believe in series two, Now, whether this was known at the point, because as I said, it may not have even been in the balance, but it, apparently some of the Nexias were made on videotape to save money. So there was obviously an awful lot of pressure as to whether this series would survive into its second season or not. And maybe it only made it because they agreed to some cost-cutting exercises.
Could be.
Oh, and you know, I wanted to bring up a point of something that Ken mentioned. Ken, you said something about you didn't like the Mary character because, you know, she was very subservient. You know, she was willing to be at Gregory's beck and call. But I think, you know, he wanted somebody who was the complete opposite of the wife he created, because if you remember, during somewhere in the middle of the show, when he finds out that, or Victoria finds out that he's doing this, that he's bringing this Mary person in, you know, he says, well, you know, I made you flawless, I made you beautiful, I made you strong-willed, and I made you the type of wife that I thought I always wanted to have. But then he realized that, you know, she was too domineering, she was too strong-willed, and he wanted somebody a little sweeter, a little more like, you know,
compliant.
I didn't get the impression that he was treating her like a slave.
No, he wanted somebody who doted on him and compliant. Yeah.
Well, he wanted somebody sweeter and more like a wife type.
It reminded me of the Egyptian times when you had the king Tut in the middle of the room, and then all the little women come to his feet and wash the feet and bring the drinks and bring the food on the platter.
Now, see, I didn't get the impression that he wanted a slave. I just got the impression that he wanted someone a little bit more sweet, a little meeker than you know, the domineering wife that he already had.
A bit more like a Stepford wife, if you've seen that film.
Yeah, good one.
I don't know. I don't
the original, not the remake with Kidman.
Oh, yeah, the original, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
How about that scene, guys? You've got to comment on the scene where he's on the couch and Mary comes over and puts her sweet little head on his shoulder. Wasn't that nice?
Aww.
Well, that was
I thought that was very nice. Lynn does that with me all the time.
You imagine?
Ken was thinking Susan Oliver during that time. Unfortunately, she wasn't in that one.
When it was first done early on, of course, that was just to make the arrival of the wife outside, you know, that little twist, you know. The other thing to make it complete, here comes the wife. Because the assumption was that lady was his wife right at the beginning.
I don't know. If you want to make some fictional characters, maybe bring Moses or maybe bring some of these other historical people and just kind of talk to them, you know, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington or something. Hey, bring them to life.
But he couldn't do that because they already existed. He had to create people that didn't exist yet.
Was that the idea, his own creation?
His own creation. He described
he could write a character. I thought he could write a character. And
no,
then
he
just
created
bring it,
them
bring it
and
to
then
life.
Uncreated them, yeah.
But Ken, that happens at the end of the fourth season with the bard.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, does anybody else have anything to add to this, or are we just about done with this one?
I wanted to ask Dave. Dave, you got to give us a rating.
What do you think?
Well, it wasn't very strong. I agree. I don't think it was a strong ending, so probably only 2 out of 5. But I do feel as though this is the only place this episode could have been. If it wasn't the last episode, it would have been a lower rating. I think it was just working through what I think was possibly, what was going on behind the scenes about whether the series would exist and, Rod Sterling, you know, appearing on the show. And maybe they would run out of money because it seemed to me pretty cheap episode, apart from having an elephant on set one day. It was, four cast members and one set.
So what was your rating again? What number?
Two and a half at the most.
All right. Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob, I got to ask you, when are we going to get Robert and Dave to give out a zero rating. I'm really waiting for one of these guys.
The problem is that people get attached to TV series and they think they can do no wrong. And that's something I've never agreed with. As a matter of fact, when I like a TV series, I'm tougher on it than I am on anything else. It's quite the opposite with me. For instance, Lynn absolutely loves House, and she never has anything bad to say about it, ever.
I wouldn't say giving a rating of two and a half is saying they can't do anything wrong. That's not a satisfactory rating.
Yeah, you're just saying average. Yeah, that's just an average rating.
Ken and I want somebody to really trash things like we do.
Well, look at it this way. I've been doing Doctor Who for 2 years, podcasts, and I reviewed, I'm up to 75 of the 75 now. I have not given a zero on any Doctor Who stories that I reviewed because I feel the efforts there to put it in, if it wasn't supposed to be there, it wouldn't have been made in the first place. I feel the same way with The Twilight Zone or any other series that I watch. At least the efforts there to get it out there.
Yeah, I'd almost think if I gave a zero, that would be the last episode of the series I watched.
That wouldn't be good.
All right. Well,
there is nothing bad to say about House, so I can't give any of those episodes a zero. Nothing with Hugh Laurie deserves a zero.
I rest my case. There you go.
Hey, Lynn, I like House. I like House. It's not a bad show.
House is great. It's not a bad. It's outstanding. It's a brilliant show.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Hugh Laurie, come on, my God. Can do no wrong. Man can do no wrong. Okay, folks. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks, and we are going to be talking about King Nine Will Not Return. I believe that's
another winner for me and Ken. Another one we love.
Thank goodness it won't return.
King Nine Will Not Return. That will be 2 weeks. And what is the date? What is our date? 2 weeks from now. That is. Anybody have a date on that?
The 2nd of October. No. Yeah.
Yep.
October 2nd.
Okay, well, on Saturday, October 2nd, we will be discussing King Nine Will Not Return. And I want to thank everybody who was here with us today. We did have a nice little turnout today. So thanks for coming, everyone, and we will see you again in 2 weeks. Bye-bye, everybody.